Good morning, everyone. Let's get started. This is a meeting of the Joint Working Group on the review of the role of the GAC. We've met several times now in order to try to finalize a report containing options and recommendations for reviewing the role of the GAC. And my co-chair, Ray Polzak, I'm sure you all know, from the board. We have a few board members with us this morning to contribute along with the GAC to these discussions. And so what I propose to do today is to do a bit of a recap of the objectives 1, 2, and 3. There may be points there that people around the table would like to make in order to refine what we have. What we have there is fairly substantive, so I think we've really conducted good work, good effort on those points. And then following that, I'd like to move to the final objective, number 6, which talks about the policy development process and how maybe GAC advice can be considered earlier in those processes or ways to make that happen. We haven't had a great deal of discussion on that point before, so I'd like to just test out today what people are thinking or whether there's more that we can contribute to the report on that topic at this time. And then next, I'd like to talk about travel support in particular, and also a proposal to hold a high-level meeting for governments at the San Francisco meeting. And the reason why I've pointed to the travel support issue in particular is because I'm aware that ICANN is currently undertaking its strategic planning, and associated with that it will be its operational plan and its budget. And while I don't have insight into all the ins and outs of how that works, I think if the GAC can make a request as part of that process, because we are anticipating an increase in a request for an increase in the level of funding to that program, that it actually helps here to set up that discussion or decision that the GAC would make later this week. So, without any further ado, first of all, are there any comments on that approach before I start in?
Before we get started, let me introduce the board members who are present. To my immediate left is Katim and then Jean-Jacques. Jean-Jacques, this is going to be his last meeting as a board member, and we will miss you and miss your wisdom. Ram Mohan right now is in another meeting and will be here. He made it. So Ram's over there. And then we have one observer here who I think some of you may know, and that's Bertrand. And Bertrand will be seated on the board this coming Friday. So that's the board members that are present today.
Okay. All right. So objective 1 relates to GAC advice to the board. I hope you all have a hard copy. If you don't, there's some available at the front here. So, okay. Objective 1, GAC advice to the board, sets us on a path to examine the nature of GAC advice and how to improve the processes or the communications and so on between the board and the GAC in terms of GAC advice. So in this report, we have identified that GAC advice is written advice in terms of our understanding, and this can include letters, communiques, principles documents, and various issues documents. The report also notes that GAC advice is in relation to public policy issues arising from the coordination of the domain name system, but also that from time to time the GAC would comment on governance-related types of issues in the kinds of advice that it would generate. There's also a reference to the GAC chair role and the understanding around what the chair communicates and how it's communicated to the board. Also, formal advice versus informal. This report finds that while the board does have an interest in clarifying this issue, that as it's not referred to in the bylaws, then the GAC or this joint working group doesn't distinguish between formal and informal. And I think we've said in discussions before with, for example, the Accountability and Transparency Review Team, that we don't think it's particularly useful to distinguish between formal and informal. So perhaps it's not clear to this joint working group why that distinction needs to be made. So that's what we have on that issue. Also, in terms of the policy development process, the report notes that it's an iterative process. And so, in terms of the advice we give, it's not all final advice in the sense that we need to react to other inputs or comments from the community and respond again. So we're always needing to update or be responsive as part of that. And so we need to bear that in mind when thinking about how to describe our advice. So is it useful to describe it as preliminary versus interim or final and so on? You know, is that something that would be useful to the board and other parts of the community? You will recall that at the last meeting we had discussion around describing advice in different ways, opinions versus recommendations and so on. And the joint working group and the GAC discussions really indicated that from a GAC perspective that advice, whatever you call it, is still advice. And also linking that back to the bylaws, which do not distinguish. In terms of advice, here we also have a reference to the nature of GAC consensus and the benefits of the GAC aiming first and foremost to develop consensus positions. The report also talks about board notifications to the GAC and that typically the board does not make use of requesting GAC advice in particular circumstances. And also the process that is allowed for where the GAC can recommend a policy development process, and that this does not typically happen. And the report offers that the GAC has not seen a need to do this. And it may have a certain optics associated with governments initiating such a process within this kind of model. So that also is a consideration. But more to the particular process for the board receiving GAC advice, there are a few examples of where the process could have been made more clear. And in particular, some options are presented. So if we just look at the options, first of all, a recommendation that the board create a transparent register or consistent record to make apparent whether, when, how the board has taken into account or responded to particular advice from the GAC. I think that remains a useful request for the joint working group to consider. Also, that the board consider submitting a written regular request for advice to the GAC. Also, that if the GAC decides to form a working group to review the operating principles, that they take into account these discussions. And the GAC has set up a working group to review the operating principles, so that group will certainly take into account the joint working group report, which we aim now to finalize in San Francisco. And we will also have the opportunity then to take into account the finalization of the ATRT final report at the end of this year. And also for the GAC to think about how to better notate written GAC advice. So is there benefit in labeling our communications more clearly? I think Portugal at one point had suggested that we call it GAC communique of recommendations or GAC communique of advice, perhaps something like that. and perhaps we could distinguish that from the parts of the communiques that are actually records of meetings that we have, and perhaps in that way we could make it more clear for our board colleagues and those in the community as well. Objective two, why don't I stop there and ask whether anyone would like to comment or try to add any additional points that they think could be reflected in objective one. EU Commission, please.
Thank you, and thank you very much for that introduction, Chair. I'm just reading the new version. Something strikes me that I thought it might be useful to share with colleagues. And it's on the very first page, actually, where it says, the bylaws require the board to take due account of GAC advice but do not provide a detailed definition of what constitutes GAC advice or place any limitation on what form such advice should take or require that it be consensual. I think here we may need to draw a link, actually, with the fact that the bylaws do require the GAC to adopt its own operating principles, and that those operating principles actually define how GAC positions shall be adopted. So I think in the logic chain, actually, we need to put that in. Because, for example, that does allow, I don't know that we've ever taken advantage of it, but it does allow for us to adopt a position on the show of hands. Implied majority voting. So I think that might be a useful useful piece of the jigsaw puzzle to fit in there. Thank you.
If I could ask a question of clarification. There's a reference in the bylaws to the GAC creating its own operating principles. Is that right? Okay. All right. Bill's nodding. Okay. Thank you. Norway.
Thank you, Chair. It's Erna Storm from Norway. Just a comment on the different, regarding the communiques and specifically on identifying what's advice and what is sort of summary, what sort of have been done or acknowledgements. I think it's still possible as it is today to identify in our communiques what is advice. So I'm not quite sure if we should sort of structure it differently or whatever, but I think it's quite clear when we acknowledge the presentations from this and that, that is not advice. So I think it's still possible to read our communiques and identify that it is advice. So it might be not advisable to change that. Also, good that Bill commented what he said also on the consensus as he did yesterday. All our letters, communiques, principles has all been consensus. They have all been consensus documents. So it's all GAC advice has in the past been consensus. Just quick comment, if I may, on the second page in the report regarding this new edited line regarding the factor into the GAC advice goes solely to the board. That is not entirely, it is in one respect right, but as I mentioned yesterday in the bylaws, in the paragraph 1J, in the first sentence, it says that the advice of the Governmental Advisory Committee on the public policy matters should be duly taken into account both in the formulation and adoption of policies. So in the formulation of policies, that means that I must see to that GAC advisor will be factored into the policy development processes. And, of course, in the adoption of policies, that is at the later stage when the ICANN board is going to make decisions, and the GAC advice will then enlighten or at least state what they think would be the best way to go forward. So that's just two comments on that. Thank you.
That's a really useful clarification, I think. Thank you, Norway. Ray, you wish to speak?
Yes. Two points. First of all, point of clarification, and this is just a mechanical clarification regarding the labeling of advice. You are advising that there should not be a separate document on advice, but that perhaps somehow in the normal communique that the GAC makes, for example, at the end of its meeting week, that they perhaps label specifically inside that communique what they're constituting as advice as opposed to reports and thank you for presentations? Yeah.
Well, I'm not quite sure if you can repeat or make it clear.
Okay.
If you want to structure it.
Right. What I heard you say was that you were interpreting that there probably should be two documents or multiple documents. That's what you heard, and that you were saying you were advising against that.
Yes.
Okay. And so my point of clarification then is that in that single document that's being prepared, would you then see a section in there where it's clearly labeled that this is advice as opposed to those things that are received for presentations and so forth?
No, not really. They refer to what the Portugal has said in the past. I don't know. Maybe Portugal can clarify on that. But still, we are labeling the issues in our communiques with a heading of a paragraph, and I think it's still structured that under that paragraph we are giving advice on that specific issue.
And
if there is a sentence there in the beginning, sort of we are thanking of or whatever presentations being given, that's of course obvious that is not advice to the board, and the rest of the substance, the material in that paragraph, then is the advice.
Right. Okay. So my question was really one of a mechanical one regarding clarification, and that. You're still then inside that, you're recommending now that inside that one large paragraph, there's still an interpretation required to discern by the reader what is intended to be advice and what is not?
Well, yeah, I think it might be that we put also some responsibility to the reader to interpret as well. But, of course, it's also the intent, I think, from the GAC to make it as clear as possible, of course. But, of course, the reader must interpret what's written there and then try to then how will that affect this issue based on our sort of standpoint. So I think...
So you're leaving it to the reader. I'm just trying to clarify. You're leaving it to the reader to discern or interpret what portions of that paragraph are advice and what portions of those paragraph are merely reporting or something like that. That is what you're trying to say?
Well, kind of, but still, I think we will then try to make it clear as possible.
Okay, I'm just trying to get a mechanical clarification. Do you want to add something, Portugal?
Yes, certainly. Luís Magalhães from Portugal. Well, what we actually think is that the role of GAC is to provide advice. So it's not worthwhile to classify different sorts of advice that could be provided, like formal or informal or whatever. What is important, actually, I like your word of the mechanics of the process, because that's what I think is missing. We should devise a process where it is clear what is being considered by the board to be answered in the form of advice, and for the relationship between the two instances to be clear, the best is after a communique, a letter, or whatever that is provided by the GAC to the community or to the board, then there should be a log of each one of the advice pieces read from that part. This should be published and open. If the GAC thinks that is not a clear interpretation of the message it is conveyed, it can correct that, And then on the right of each one of these entries in the table, there should be the answer of the board to these questions. If we do that, I don't think we have any problem. Also, regarding this this issue of consensual positions and so on, of course, the GAC works on the basis of consensus. It's true. But if we think that the role of GAC is to provide advice and not to take decisions, to narrow the possibilities of advice that GAC can provide just to those that are consensual by rule, let's say, is not a good idea. It's best to let the GAC operate according to its operating principles and decide how to express the advice, because in certain instances, it may, for instance, say most of the GAC members advise on this direction, but there is this and that positions which were taken by this and these member states, and that can be something that the GAC finds useful to convey to the decision level.
Thank you for that clarification. One other comment I had with regard to Norway's reference to the added line. It clearly, in the current circumstance, policy advice is being received by the board much from the GAC at a much later period of time than the policy is being developed. And so in our minds and in the minds of many people is that there's, and I think that's where Heather wants to go in the policy development process discussion, is trying to decide how that GAC input can get into the policy process and earlier. In other words, get to the bottom as opposed to coming in at the top, I think. So I think that's something we need to explore a little bit later.
Ray, if I may, one example that the GAC is very mindful of is the 2007 principles for the introduction of new GTLDs that actually preceded the decision taken by the board regarding the policy for new GTLDs. And so the GAC was actually early. We were ahead of other parts of the community. Right. So I think my GAC colleagues would agree that while it may be tempting to point to the problem of the GAC taking too long, I'm not sure that the evidence supports that conclusion.
I'm not saying too long. I'm just saying that getting into the policy process at an earlier time is what's desirable. And so it's a matter of the entry. It's not how long it takes you to get to make a decision. I mean, that's your business, the way you do it. What's really more important is at what point that you enter in the process with your opinions, because you have a greater influence in the process development by the bottom and understanding clearly what's being said by getting into the process at an earlier point. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I think we would agree with that. I'm thinking Portugal wanted to quickly respond on that point, in which case I will give them the floor. Then we have the EU Commission and then Switzerland and Norway.
Well, as a matter of fact, then I saw that you were raising the same sort of issue, but I would like to emphasize it. You see, it's interesting that from the board point of view, there is the perception that somehow the GAC lags on considering the issues that are in discussion. We have the completely opposite perception. And, for instance, on geographic names and also on trademark protection, the GAC raised these issues much earlier than they were considered by the board. The same happens on the economic consequences of GTLDs, which is a standing issue so far, and the GAC has been pointing it out quite frequently. From our point of view, there is a lack of answer of the board to the GAC concerns in many of the GTLD process, but I believe the reason is because we don't have a clear procedure for having everybody see what is recommended, what is advised, and then how this is being handled by the board. If that happened, I think we would not have a difference of view from this point because everything would be very clear.
If I may respond real quick, I'm aware of what you're saying, and that is different from, I think, from what I'm trying to say. Because what I'm trying to say is that the ability of the GAC to offer advice earlier in the policy development process in the GNSO, for example, is an important thing. And that's what the issue I'm describing. And I fully am cognizant and aware of the problem that you're addressing, which I think is a separate issue. And so I would like, so my comments were directed at the former, which is ways for the GAC advice to be injected into the policy process inside the supporting organizations at an earlier point of time. That's my where my comment was directed. It wasn't directed at anything else. It wasn't directed in any way, shape, or form that considering that the GAC was lagging and or providing advice at all. It's just a matter of a mechanic of how we could get the GAC advice into the policy process at an earlier point in time. And if I was misunderstood, then it's my fault for not speaking clearly.
Thank you, Ray. EU Commission.
Way. Thank you. Yes, I also wanted to react actually on that point. And I'm pleased with your reassurance, Ray, but this is a rather persistent myth actually that comes up all the time that the GAC is late with everything. And it's a myth actually. And it's a myth for several reasons. And one is, has already been mentioned by my colleague, that when we have done work on a very substantive issue like new GTLDs, then we were the first and we came in. That doesn't seem to have helped the process a lot. So the idea that the GAC coming in early is going to help the process, I think, is a convenient myth, because sometimes there are real problems, actually. There are real differences of opinions between stakeholders. So, but one other point I'd make is that, and that needs to be taken into account, and that is the enormous workload in the GAC. If you're a member of the ASO, for example, you only deal with addressing issues, generally. If you're a member of the GNSO, you deal with GTLD issues. If you're a member of the CCNSO, you deal with CCTLD issues. We deal with everything. I mean, we have a huge workload of issues to deal with, and I think it's remarkable in the 6 or 7 years I've been coming, the amount of effort made by GAC members to engage early with other members of the community, either informally or in joint working groups. We've devoted a huge amount of our agenda time to having bilateral meetings with other ICANN stakeholders. So it's really a persistent myth that needs to be challenged on a number of levels. So I understand the reassurance you've given us here, but I think we need to be careful in this document to really try and kill this myth once and for all, actually, that there's a problem due to GAC lateness. That certainly isn't my perception. I'm happy to talk about it. The other issue, just very quickly, I want to mention, is this issue of... I think there's a danger in trying to introduce the concept of informal and formal advice for the reasons that have been very well explained by my colleagues. Also, I don't think the bylaws give us that right. Actually, the bylaws do not make such a differentiation. It's a legal document. It's the legal basis, actually, for ICANN as an organization. Therefore, the bylaws would have to be changed, actually, I think, to... introduce this kind of concept. I mean, I do understand that we have an issue to clarify here, because some members of the board, I think for good reasons, sometimes need to know whether we're giving advice or making observations in our communiques and our letters. And I think that point's well taken. But I think there's an easy solution there, and that is that we adopt a discipline that, to avoid any misunderstanding, we preface comments with the GAC would therefore advise the board that. And that should solve the problem, because as my colleague from Portugal mentioned, we need to have this register actually of when we've given advice and when there's a response. And I think that logging would be much easier if we preface it. But I don't think we should make too much of a fuss. I mean, a lot of the content of GAC communiques that probably we would not argue are advice are things like we thank the hosts. There were so many members at the meeting. I don't think anybody would ever confuse that or have an issue of deciding whether that was advice or was it information. But the bylaws are worth reading, I think, actually. I mean, they simply say the Government Advisory Committee should consider and provide advice on the activities of ICANN as they relate to the concerns of governments. So the emphasis there is on the activities. It's not about the policies. It's not about this or that. It's the activities. It's everything. And I presume none of us in this room were probably here or were responsible for drafting these bylaws. That was a long time ago. But we are subject to them. So I think if we feel that they're not precise enough, then we may want to change the bylaws. But as they stand, actually, I don't think we should be looking to introduce... interpretations which differ from the provisions, the clear provisions, I think, of the bylaws. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Next, we have Switzerland, then Norway, then Italy.
Thank you. Maybe it's because it's quite early on a Sunday morning, but I have a little problems in seeing the value added in discussing which pieces of a communique are advice or not. I mean, even if you take the last one, for instance, and then point three, a new GTLD, the first one is an introductory sentence, then we say that we discussed it, and then the advice is there. So, I mean, if you read it, somebody who understands the text should be able to distinguish what pieces are introduction or no, what is the substance. But if it helps to avoid confusion, I think we could go along the lines with the EU and others who said we could reformulate it, that we start after an introduction, we start in having a phrase like the GAC gives the following advice and then make some bullet points. But I don't think that this really changes anything in the substance and in the readability. Thank you.
Thank you. Norway.
Yes, thank you. I just also wanted to, as also Bill eloquently put it, that we should not make too much of a fuss about this. We can just restructure it and we should sort of go proceed on that. So I think that's well said. And also on this informal advice or not, and we also don't think that's a good idea. We should just keep it as advice as it has been. So it's just make it too complicated if you have to have different kinds of advice. So that's also very important. Also, Heather, thank you for mentioning this this principles that GAC made in 2007. I was just going to mention that as well. And of course, that's a really good example of how GAC has been active and responded, and which then has not been factored into the process in ICANN. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Italy.
Yes, thank you, Chair. So, it is very important, this discussion concerning clarifying what is GAC advice, and this is also contained in the review team on accountability and transparency as a basic point for a starting point of relation GAC and the board. It is also true that since the GAC is working for consensus, sometimes the advice may be not so detailed, let's say. And the real point is that perhaps the board should make an evaluation of all the implementation issues when some of the advice is regarding GTLDs or the DAG, final DAG document, etc. So we find occasions like yesterday discussion where the staff of ICANN talked to us that the advice of the GAC were taken account and were being considered and perhaps satisfactorily solved. Of course, this is not something that we should know from the staff, because our relation is directly with the board. And what I find is that sometimes the board should consider the difficulties in implementing and so having a continuous relation with the GAC in order to really understand what is the meaning of the advice and the potential implications in decision-making process, that is responsibility of the board. Maybe this is, in a way, not well exercised in the present times, and we are very aware that new GTLDs is a very difficult and challenging problem, a challenging exercise for ICANN. So, in order to avoid that being too formal, then delay the understanding of the advice and also the implementation issues, this relation of the board with ICANN should be more about really understanding what is the advice, what the implication of the advice, and trying to solve this. Otherwise, the time is going on, and then the community could say that the GAC is delaying the decision making of ICANN. So this is a very crucial point.
Thank you for that, Italy. Would anyone else like to comment on this particular part of the report? If not, I will move on to GAC liaisons. Ah, Brazil, please.
Thank you. Still in objective one, I'd like to note that maybe we need further discussions on a specific paragraph, and I'd like to ask, initially I'd like to ask for initial clarification on that. I'm referring to page 2, last paragraph, when we talk about GAC consensus. The first part is okay for me. I'll read the full paragraph. An appropriate balance in approach, therefore, would be for the GAC to identify consensus where it exists, record where it doesn't exist, and describe the various positions, and provide advice to the board in a timely manner. This is okay for me. My doubt remains in the last sentence, last part of the paragraph. That is, if the GAC emphasizes consensus too much in its efforts to provide advice, it could be at the expense of both providing a full account of the variety of views and being able to provide advice in a timely manner. I'd like to ask clarification for that, please.
I will attempt to clarify, and if other colleagues can assist with that. Actually, why don't I ask New Zealand, please?
Thank you, Chair. I am awake this morning. It's a fair point raised by Brazil, but there's been the GAC has always attempted to reach a consensus position, obviously, and puts a great deal of effort into trying to achieve consensus. I think what the sentence is simply pointing out is that occasionally consensus simply is not going to be reached. And under those circumstances, it is still necessary for the GAC to provide advice to the board rather than continuing on with a discussion which is never going to reach some form of convergence around a consensus. Under those circumstances, it is necessary to provide advice along the lines suggested here. It's not suggested for a moment that this is something which would normally be engaged in. But we have had an occasion recently where we've had to convey advice that the GAC has not a consensus position on this, that there are dissenting views. I suspect there will be such occasions in the future. I think the purpose of the sentence is simply to recognise that reality. Thank you.
Brazil.
Thank you for the clarification. Very good word. So maybe what bring my concerns word was the unclear words, if the GAC emphasizes consensus too much. And if I understood correctly, maybe the crucial point here are the situations where the GAC has to respect a deadline. So maybe we could emphasize that if the GAC needs to meet a specific deadline, and in this case, and a new emphasizes consensus should be have an appropriate approach, a specific approach only in these occasions. Maybe linking the idea of deadlines. Otherwise, I think in this way it would be much clearer. Thank you.
Thank you. I also recall discussions last time from related to the issue of a growing GAC, and that as the GAC grows, we can expect forming consensus to take longer. And that's there is a relationship between those two things. Just to note that. Okay, so what I propose then is in this section we rework that text in light of Brussels comments, and that we also clarify the section where Norway commented regarding, you know, the bylaw provisions and what really they mean for the treatment of GAC advice, not just with the board but the rest of the community. And I think they're both useful clarifications. So let's move on to discuss GAC liaisons. The first liaison role that is examined here is the GAC liaison to the board. And here in the report, we outline the understanding that exists currently within the GAC, at least, regarding how the GAC liaison communicates with the board, on what basis, and what the expectations are. Also noted here is the fact that it's not entirely clear how in practice, in a more detailed sense, that actually works. And so there's really a request here to look more closely at that, recognizing that there is a need for confidentiality when participating in a board meeting because of the kinds of information that that is provided for board discussion and consideration. Also here, the point is made that there are some challenges when it comes to governments representing each other, and that governments really don't tend to defer their representational rights, capacities to other governments. And so this means there needs to be some flexibility on both sides when interacting with other parts of the community. And we can't entirely get around this fact. The text that's been added is following the UK proposal, which I believe was accepted in Brussels, where they wish to emphasize the need for governments to have a clear and comprehensive understanding of ICANN's strategic thinking, focus areas, business planning, and key operational decisions. In order to make the point, in order to communicate with their respective administrations, in order to come to meetings and participate fully and have that understanding and awareness within their government. And so this point was added in relation to the suggestion to have an additional liaison to the GAC. I think anticipated that there would be a senior level liaison, and that is reflected in the list of options as number 4. So the other options that are identified here are around determining the necessity or appropriateness of the GAC liaison participating in all board meetings, or I suppose in participating in all parts of a board meeting. As some do not follow the GAC face-to-face meetings where there's a particular communique to reference. Option number 2, clarifying the non-disclosure constraints imposed on all board members. And 3, clarifying that the GAC liaison to the board is not considered the sole mechanism by which the GAC would be made aware of the board's interest in seeking GAC's views. Also useful to clarify that. And number 5, here it is, yes, complement the GAC liaison to the board with a senior ICANN staff member assigned to monitor and provide updates to the board and other relevant ICANN staff functions. So I think I was confusing the two. One is a proposal for a board liaison to the GAC, and the other proposal is for a senior ICANN staff member. So, are there any comments or suggestions for improving or refining New Zealand, please?
It's a general comment, not specifically on the the difficulties that the GAC chair no doubt has in working with a group of people who over time develop a cohesion and common culture among themselves, and I'm sure it's very difficult, but I and these options I think attempt to clarify that. I just wanted to make a comment, and I know Suzanne in her role in liaison with the GNSR in the past has made similar comments, and my experience with working with the cross-constituency working group in trying to make it clear to other members of the ICANN constituencies that a member of the GAC cannot represent the GAC as a whole unless there's a pre-discussed consensus position. Can only speak, in fact, as a representative of their government. And, in fact, what I personally found was that there were three levels. There were cases where I could put forward with confidence the consensus view of the GAC on an issue. There were situations where I could put forward the position of New Zealand as an individual member of the GAC. And there were times when I offered my own personal opinion as a member of the ICANN community. They are three quite distinct positions, and it is sometimes very difficult for other members of ICANN who frequently represent themselves and their own expertise and point of view rather than attempting to represent something like a government or a consensus view of another organisation. Very difficult, and I just wanted to acknowledge the fact that this is the points in here are well made. This is a difficult issue for the chair of the GAC or for anybody else who's acting in a liaison position. Thank you.
Thank you for that, New Zealand. Any other comments? Wow, okay. All right. Is that a request for the floor? Okay. I wasn't sure. All right. So let's move on to GAC liaisons to the ICANN supporting organizations and advisory committees. Yes, I am skipping the nominating committee. I don't think we need to dwell on that today. All right. So GAC liaisons to the ICANN supporting organizations and advisory committees. Well, we have touched upon this, and Frank has given us a current example of some of the issues that come up when trying to interact with other parts of the community in relation to, in this case, a cross-constituency working group. So I will move to the options in this section. So options that have been presented here are to develop a common understanding regarding the scope and function of liaisons between and among the GAC and the SOs and ACs to ensure that we have shared expectations, develop agreed procedures for communications between GAC liaisons and the SOs and ACs and between the GAC liaisons and the GAC to ensure more consistency in the reporting and coordination roles of the GAC's liaisons. So this is in recognition of the important role that's played in communicating, sharing information with other parts of the community. At number three, considering creating teams of GAC volunteers to serve as liaisons to all of the SOs and ACs on a rotating basis in the event that normal work priorities of an individual GAC member prevent full-time liaison functions, another member of the GAC team would step in. So that's proposed in the interests of long-term success in interacting with other parts of the community. And next, review the roles of ICANN staff assigned to support the work of the SOs and ACs to determine whether there are additional opportunities for information sharing on issues of interest to a cross-section of SOs and ACs. Number five, consider extending the model represented by the joint GAC-CCNSO working group for the IDN-CC-TLD fast-track process to other issues, which is interesting because you could look at the cross-community working group on Recommendation 6 as being an experiment in that regard, and there were challenges for the GAC to participate in that. Number six, encourage the ICANN board to explore the merits of amending the current policy development processes to introduce more flexibility for purposes of facilitating inputs from the entire ICANN community, including the GAC, at early stages in the process. So there's clearly overlap here to where we talk about policy development processes elsewhere in this report. And then lastly, explore whether the ICANN bylaws need to be amended to more affirmatively provide for GAC input to ICANN's policy development processes, vice the current provisions which call for the provision of GAC advice directly to the board. Okay, so in terms of liaisons generally, if anyone around the table would like to further comment, and I think we can also look more at the policy development process, and if there are thoughts there, they would be very welcome as well. We're all agreed. Excellent. Ah, EU Commission, saving the day. Thank you.
As usual. Thank you. Just a general observation, actually, from my recollection, given that I perhaps have been coming here for a longer time than some of my colleagues. My recollection is that liaisons were, I think, originally considered useful at a time when the GAC used to meet and discuss its own business, and it was good to have some conduit for communication with other supporting organizations. But then, you know, about 5-6 years ago, I think we changed our working methods quite dramatically, and we started having a lot more face-to-face meetings with other supporting organizations and advisory committees. And that really negated a lot of the added value, actually, of having liaisons, or a lot of the function of having liaisons, because we could have our own face-to-face exchanges, as we've done since, and we're doing at this meeting. And I think that needs to be taken into account when we reflect on what we expect liaisons to do now. I think we have to be blunt, I think we have to be clear that they have some added value if we're going to have direct face-to-face meetings with other ICANN constituencies when we need to have them. And I don't mean that to sound negative in terms of the contributions that colleagues have made in the past. It's just that it's a significant burden for a colleague who volunteers to be a liaison, actually. And I wouldn't like to think that they were making a large commitment, which you know was then being kind of minimized in terms of added value, because then we then have the face-to-face meetings. So just a general observation, I think, and to add a little historical perspective about why we had more active liaisons in the past, but recently, actually, I think they've had less to do, and I think that's a good thing. I think that's because of the positive development in our own working methods. Thank you.
Thank you for that. United States, and then Ray.
Thank you, Heather, and thank you, Bill, and Frank, for your comments earlier. I think you're quite correct. We were motivated many years ago to do this just to improve the channels of communication, because at one point in time it was truly, I think, a siloed arrangement. I'm looking at Bertrand. He's nodding his head. That's one of his favorite words. I couldn't agree with you more. A bit like ships passing in the night. We all travel all over the world 3 times a year and then never speak to one another. So we have certainly overcome that particular barrier in terms of having more face-to-face exchanges. But it goes beyond just the face-to-face. I think we need to, and this may not be the right place in the document to flesh it out, but clearly in terms of the policy development process, there needs to be, I think, a better understanding of how government public policy advice, concerns, experiences, perspectives vis-a-vis national laws, policies, and regulations that have a bearing can be taken into account. And I know, Ray, you mentioned that earlier. The challenge for the GAC has been the bylaws are structured in such a way that our advice goes up to you. So it is either up, and this is something we would welcome your views on, these board members of this current working group. Is it your understanding that you would then direct staff to review? And I think Luis had a really good suggestion of after each communique, perhaps, this is where an analysis can be made. What is the GAC commenting on, and how can we take it into account? What is the next step on ICANN's side? So that would be something interesting for us to get some feedback on. I think these 2 points about, and there's a great deal of overlap with the ATRT recommendations, which is extremely helpful, I think, to us. The issue of staff support, some of it could be purely administrative support to ensure that if you do have joint meetings, it doesn't fall to a full GAC member or the GAC chair, who is already quite preoccupied in the role as being liaison to the board, to do the scheduling. I mean, some of these issues are purely administrative, and yet right now, other than a little bit of Max's time, there is no such administrative support, similar to what the GNSO receives and the CCNSO receives. And I'm talking just basic stuff. This is just scheduling phone calls, scheduling meetings. So just basic admin. We don't have that. Nor do we have, at least that is visible to the GAC, any staff members on the policy side of the house who understand governments, who spend time in the GAC room, who, if they have a question as to, well, help me understand your position on intellectual property protection or geographic names, or the big one, objections. Help me understand that. We haven't had that kind of exchange at staff level, so that then when the board is being briefed, and of course we don't see those briefings either, that we could then make sure that when you are being briefed on GAC views, it is crystal clear, and we're confident that in addition to our GAC chair in her capacity as a liaison, and of course we have complete confidence in her, but that there is a record, and it is, we have confidence that you all, if you have any questions, we can answer them, that you understand why the GAC is asking for X, Y, or Z. So there are quite a few of those outstanding issues that I think is useful for us as GAC and board to better understand. I think Frank made a very good point about the rest of the community as well. Just as my own, I'll chime in to explain why I found I was unable to participate actively in the Recommendation 6 working group, joint working group. The number of emails per day, I lost count, frankly, of how many there were. The number of doodle polls and conference calls per week was actually too hard to keep up with. And my objective was to make sure I could effectively represent the U.S. government's views. I don't participate in these discussions on a personal basis. So it has to be in my capacity as the U.S. representative to the GAC. And I found it was just a very well-intentioned and I think a really useful exercise. I guess we would use an informal phraseology, sort of like a brainstorming session that produces results, really good suggestions, very, very strong constructive ideas that probably then need another platform, some other way to be further vetted and discussed. So I do think we need to look at those kinds of mechanisms and how to improve them and work with the rest of the community as to what works best for the different constituencies. And just I'm mindful that some of my private sector counterparts in the U.S. commented to me after that particular exercise and said, you know, the GAC probably needs to do GAC 101 at every meeting so that you all can explain to the community, again, who you are and how you do what you do. And so maybe that is something that would be worthwhile. I don't know how we want to tackle that. But there does seem to be a persistent sort of lack of understanding, and I think we, the GAC, can assume responsibility for that and apologize that we haven't been more clear, but that does need to be the misperceptions as to who we are and how we contribute probably needs to be laid to rest, and maybe it's just a fact-based GAC 101. Thank you.
Thank you for that. United States, the Netherlands.
Yes, thank you. The question about the volunteers, I think Bill referred to the fact that the volunteer mechanism doesn't work so well yet with other mechanisms. I think, concurring with Suzanne, the liaisons and the volunteers, we need them really to be coming out of the GAC. And the reason that it, let's say, not working well is more the question of time constraints and having all these extra tasks on top of this. So what I would suggest is what also Suzanne said. Many of these tasks of administrative support, let's say, taking care of arranging phone calls, meetings, etc., can be done by the GEC Secretariat also. And we will have probably sufficient resources for doing this. So let's really use this when we have the new format of the new GEC Secretariat. And I think this kind of suggestions, also what Suzanne said, we should take them on board in modeling the new GEC Secretariat. Thank you.
Thank you, Netherlands. Next on the list, I have Ray. I actually gave away his speaking slot, so my apologies. And then New Zealand.
Thank you, Heather. First of all, responding to the EU, I also believe that there's a lot of value that occurs in the face-to-face meetings that the GAC conducts with various SOs and ACs. There's a lot gained there, and a lot that that obviates the need for a liaison in some of those in discussions. I would also note, and I, in particular looking at the regional internet registries, that most of them in their policy forums generally have present at those meetings members of the national governments of their region. And I know, for example, the RIPE NCC conducts a roundtable meeting on a periodic basis with members of the governments of its region. So while these people aren't necessarily the representatives to the GAC from that particular government, in a lot of cases they are, but the point I'm trying to make here is that there are some other relationships that exist between various national governments and various aspects of the policy process. And so there are other mechanisms that are working there and actually in some cases have worked very, very well. So I think that needs to be taken into consideration as well when we're looking at the notion of what the value added is and what the role of this liaison would be to these various supporting organizations. Suzanne, you laid out a big, long laundry list of things there, many of which I think would belong in a discussion where we talk about support to the GAC and Secretariat and so forth. And so I would say at this point that, yes, there's a lot of things that need to be looked at, and you've made some very, very good points. I won't say any more on that right now. I would ask if my colleagues that are here would like to say anything, please do so. Please do so now. I'll give you the opportunity in my time. Jean-Jacques?
Well, actually, I'm afraid I can't contribute very usefully to this or that specific item. If you want, perhaps later on, towards the close of the meeting, if you want a parting shot from a departing member of the board, I'd be glad to do that in 2 minutes or a bit more.
Okay. Katim, anything?
You know, I'll be very brief because I'm really enjoying the discussion, just getting the feedback that we're hearing from you. It's very good progress, I think, we're making, at least beginning to understand from your perspective what the issues are. And I think in that regard, the remarks that we just heard from Suzanne are really most welcome and certainly something we are going to be bearing in mind and taking to the board, especially with reference to providing and really a level playing field of support to GAC. I think it's really, if we're going to have if we're going to have a multi-stakeholder driven process, in my mind, it's not going to be helpful to treat our stakeholders in a differential manner. And so I think we should ensure that we give, especially a constituency as important as the GAC, in my mind, as we go forward, give them all the adequate support that they need to get. I've always told people the GAC is one of the most important constituencies because, like we all know, as I always keep telling people, stakeholders are all created equal, but some are more equal than others. And I think GAC is certainly one of the more equal partners here. I think with regards to facilitating GAC's outreach efforts, I think this might be something that could be certainly considered by the Public Participation Committee, for which Jean-Jacques chairs, especially with particular regard to providing you slots in the schedules to have, you know, precise outreach efforts like that. I think that would be most welcome and I think most productive. Again, thanks for your suggestions and ideas. Ray?
Thank you, Kateem. We have New Zealand next. If others are interested in speaking, let me know now, because we're going to move to a break in the next few minutes. So I see EU Commission after that. You would like to respond first, Ray? Okay. Ray will respond, New Zealand, EU Commission.
Well, I just the last thing I wanted to touch on was Suzanne's mention of the GAC 101. Certainly that is, to me, very, very important. I know that I have spent time in meetings and in sessions with folks trying to get them to understand that what the GAC is, and actually trying to explain to people, you know, when a person from the government is there, what they can and cannot say, and what, you know, and getting them to understand that the restrictions, if you will, that are placed on sometimes members of national government as far as how they can participate and what they can do. I certainly think that a GAC 101 type of material is called for. I would highly advise that this be done in some kind of interactive media, such that the soundtrack could be presented in many different languages and so forth, and that's something that certainly could be part of a support package that the GAC could request from ICANN and so forth. So I'm very, very open to those kinds of things as far as education and outreach, and so I think that a lot of these things probably need to be taken into discussion at some point of the support to the GAC, and I certainly think the production of educational materials is a part of that support. And I'll give back the time.
Thank you. New Zealand.
Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to make a comment. I think Suzanne's point about the GAC 101 is essential. The GAC means and methods of operation do need to be made clear to the wider constituency. I wanted, though, to note that the cross-constituency working group method, the brainstorm, as somebody referred to it, I think is a powerful tool that can be used perhaps more deliberatively and creatively within the ICANN working methods in the broader sense. And that does pose an enormous challenge if the GAC is going to contribute. But I think it's a challenge that we do need to face up to. And there's something perhaps that does need to be looked at, is if this form of brainstorming is to become more common in areas where a particular issue needs to be nailed down in a relatively short space of time. Governments do have a challenge working to that. The GAC has even more of a challenge in working to that. But it's one I think that we need to face up to and find some method of dealing with. I think we have to accept that sometimes it's necessary to have governmental points of view put on the record without necessarily GAC consensus being reached or even consulted with. And I note that in that context, actually, that there have been a number of individual governments sending letters to the ICANN board, for example, on matters that have concerned to those particular governments. This is not bypassing the GAC so much as additional communication, including the GAC. So I think we need to recognise these alternative approaches as well. Thank you.
Thank you. EU Commission.
Thank you, and I'll be very short. I don't like to be between people in their coffee break. I think one of the things I find very interesting rereading the bylaws, actually, and I think it's an interesting mind game we can play here to try and understand some of the problems faced by the GAC with liaisons, and that is the bylaws only provide for the GAC to have liaisons to other supporting organisations and the board and advisory committees, but not in the other direction, actually. So the mind game, I think, is interesting to play. Is imagine if we reverse that and we ask the GNSO and the ASO and the board, for example, to have a liaison to the GAC instead of the other way around. Now, I'm not going to go so far as to propose that, but I think it highlights, I think you'd find that very difficult as board members, actually, to select one of you to come here to our meetings and miss out on your meetings and follow our activities and our email lists. and then be compromised in public by us asking you what the position of the board is on X, Y, and Z. But that's the liaison problem that we have, actually, and it's a unique problem that we have because, well, not unique, I think there are other liaisons to the board, actually. But the other supporting organizations aren't required to have liaisons to the GAC. So I think it's interesting. The original architects of ICANN in the bylaws decided that we would have liaisons to other supporting organizations generally, but not the other way around. So I think that's partly why we have a problem. It looks easy on the outside. Why can't you pick somebody to come and tell us what you're worried about and what you'd like to talk about, et cetera, et cetera? But it's actually much more difficult in practice. And I think if you imagined the board or one of the other supporting organizations having to do that in reverse, then the problems become much easier to understand. Thank you.
Thank you for that. And Ray would like to raise a point.
Yeah, real quickly, the ASO MOU, which is basically what is the bylaws with regards to the ASO, if you read the bylaws on the in that section, it says do what the ASO MOU says. There is a provision in that MOU for the ASO to establish liaisons with anyone. It's just has never been exercised. So it does, no, I know that it does exist there. But the point is well taken, and perhaps that should be more clearly stated here, and maybe there should be some consideration. And while I'm at it, real quickly, we should not be afraid to recommend changes to the bylaws.
Thank you for that. Okay, so let's take a break, 30 minutes. Let's reconvene here at 11. Okay.